Do you know what it takes to set up a business selling crickets to be ground into flour in the state of Utah? Or one that sells cat litter made from tofu in Hawaii? Yeah, me either. But someone does, and that someone is today's sponsor, Northwest Registered Agent. They can answer all your questions, from what licenses you need to turn bugs into food, or how to set up an LLC for your yarn dyeing business. Whatever weird, wonderful, slightly unhinged thing you're trying to sell, these are your people. Northwest Registered Agent has been helping small business owners and entrepreneurs launch and grow businesses for nearly 30 years. They are the largest registered agent and LLC service in the United States, with over 1,500 corporate guides, real people who know your local laws and can help you and your business every step of the way. Don't pay hundreds or thousands of dollars for what you can get from Northwest for free. Visit northwestregisteredagent.com/happensfree and start using free resources to build something amazing. Get more with Northwest Registered Agent at northwestregisteredagent.com/happensfree.
So we need a social media wrap-up for the Work Bake Off. Any takers?
I can design posts on Canva.
I can also design posts on Canva.
Well, I can design posts with the jam tart theme on Canva.
That's great. I can design posts with the jam tart theme and generate a moving image of a jam roly-poly rolling on Canva.
Well, I can design posts and create a 3D headline that says bake your tarts out on Canva.
I can design posts and create a 3D headline and turn your face into a Bakewell tart on Canva.
All right, calm down.
With a huge range of easy-to-use design AI tools, anyone can with Canva.
I can slice a video of a croquembouche.
And I'm cruising down this dirt road with the savannah and the baobabs of Africa behind me. I'd been in this filthy, filthy water filled with crocodile poop the day before, and some had splashed in my mouth. Anyway, we set up this whole thing, and we're going to do this amazing show open. I'm Forrest Galante, and I've come to the Zambezi Valley to study blah, blah, blah. And so we're all set, everybody's in place, and I start driving, and now my stomach's going, I go, I'm Forrest Galante, and I am going to shit my pants and jump off of the motorcycle and run into the bushes and pull my pants down.
Hey everyone, I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at entrepreneur.com. Welcome to How Success Happens. So today's guest has been described as a modern day Charles Darwin with a little dash of Indiana Jones for the animal world. Well, whichever it is, there is a 50-50 chance he just crawled out of somewhere very gross and very dangerous. Forrest Galante is a biologist, TV host, producer, and all-around crazy person who you will see a lot more of on Shark Week, which kicks off July 26th on Discovery. Welcome, our old pal, Forrest. How are you?
Dan, I am so good. Thanks for having me. And you're not wrong. You are not wrong. 70, not even, 55 hours ago, I was covered head to toe in Humboldt squid slime and ink in the Sea of Cortez. I swear to God, I drove all night, got here around midnight last night, woke up frazzled, and here we are. So the introduction was very apt.
So what do you do to get the slime off? Is there a special soap you use, or is there no hope?
It depends who you ask. If you ask me, it's gone. If you ask my wife, I smell disgusting still. So it really depends who you ask. I take a lot of hot showers, and my clothes are ruined, but the smell, I believe, is gone.
Well, we are recording remotely, so there are blessings. What can I say?
Right. Exactly right. And that is success for me.
Yes. So last time you and I chatted, you texted me a video of you doing something that I believe the technical term for it is batshit crazy. There was this video of you swimming with like 100 sharks swarming around you. Mm-hmm. Are all your toes and body parts accounted for?
I mean, for the most part, there are little bits and pieces missing here and there, but for the most part, yeah. I mean, we've made some amazing programming this year between an upcoming project that I can't talk too much about yet that is going to be a Discovery Channel project, and Shark Week, as you mentioned. It has been go, go, go on the road. Not to mention the incredible stuff I'm doing in Ventara in India with that world's largest rescue and rehab. And it's been go, go, go. And some of the animal encounters in the last 18 months have been the most astonishing things I ever thought I would do. So everything's here, all the bits and pieces, but yeah, it's been amazing.
Well, good to know. And so you've dedicated your life to protecting animals, finding ones that people thought were extinct, no matter how bitey they may be. And I remember when I first spoke to you, you told me that your impetus for doing all this was that you were doing something else, I believe with worms, and you were kind of bored. Is that
ants.
Right?
Ants at the time.
Ants. Yeah. Okay, close. Yeah. I'm not a biologist.
No, that's okay. you know, I don't know if that was the exact impetus of it, but it was just the fact that I wasn't making a difference, you know, and I literally, it's interesting because of the premise of your show, but there's so much that we've done. And the point of what I'm getting at is I came out of school, like most kids, being like, I'm going to change the world. I'm going to do these amazing things and I'm going to make such a big difference. And I realized very quickly that while some biologists do have huge impacts, following the traditional routes of being a biologist, I was not making any real impact, not on a scale that mattered to me. Yes, I could save a worm or an ant or a turtle, but I wasn't going to change the world. And I don't know that I've changed the world yet, but at least millions and millions and millions of people have fallen in love with wildlife and conservation through some of the media that I have put together. So that's been really pivotal to me. And that's the motivation. You know, it wasn't that I was bored. It was that I wasn't making a big enough difference. And I still feel that way. I still feel like I'm not making a big enough difference, but I'm on a much bigger path to it with owning a big production entity now and building all this content.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about that. What you just mentioned in India, could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So, just about, I guess, probably about a year and a half ago now, something around along those lines, maybe. Yeah. About a year and a half ago, I met, Anand Ambani, who is, you know, part of the Ambani family, incredibly wealthy family based out of India. And the son, Anand, who's not far off of my age, has an unwavering passion for wildlife and conservation. And that's why he knew who I was and why I knew who he was. And a very, very lengthy story made relatively short. He said, go and tour my facility. I own a place called Ventara, which is designed to be the world's largest and most advanced wildlife rescue and rehabilitation center. He said, go and tour it and tell me what you think. So I left, I went and I toured his place for 2 or 3 days. And even in 2 or 3 days, I only saw 20% of it. I mean, it's such an enormous place. And then I met with him and he said, what do you think? And I said, here are all the positives, which were substantial, you know, world's greatest elephant hospital, most advanced animal husbandry for X, Y, and Z animals, the never say no policy of never saying no to an animal coming in, blah, 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 blah. And here's what's wrong. He said, well, what's wrong? I said, you're not sharing this with the world. He's like, what do you mean? Mm. I was like, this is, I don't think I use this terminology, but I was like, this is criminal. Like, you have developed some of the best wildlife expertise, animal husbandry practices on planet Earth because of the incredible resources that you have, you know, due to being so affluent. And you're not sharing it. And he's like, well, how do I share it? And I was like, I can make videos and TV shows and stuff and share it. And he goes, great, do it. I was like, I'm sorry, what? He's like, just do it. I was like, okay. And, you know, it wasn't like it was just happened overnight, but basically he said, go ahead and do it and do it how I want to, and connected me with his people and his teams. And that's been a huge project for the last couple of years that I hope will go for many, many more.
Yeah. Well, you know, your production company. So you're, you know, we see you on TV, we see you on social media, but you're not just a hired gun that flies in and hosts something and disappears. You run your own production company, which has an amazing name, Fantasticus Pictures.
That's right.
Did I say that right?
You did. And the first option sounds great, but no, I have built Fantasticus Pictures with my partner, Eric Evangelista, from the ground up. We are now at this point, from what we can tell, the largest production company in the world for wildlife media outside of the BBC. You know, we're making so much presenter-led, hosted wildlife programming and adventure between YouTube, TV, streamers. And that's all just come from a passion and not changing anything about how we do things other than saying we want to do more and more and make it better and better, you know, and staying very true to our own sort of North Star. And it's been an amazing ride. And yeah, it's exhausting because I deal with legal and finance right, and, you know, all these things that a guy who cares about fiddling with animals for a living shouldn't be. But it's enabled me to do things like make this amazing show in India that we mentioned when, you know, Anant says, go ahead and do it. I know how to do it.
So, well, first of all, tell me about the name Fantasticus. How did that come about?
So Fantasticus Pictures is named after my first, the most impactful extinct animal discovery I ever had, which way back when I was nothing more than a hired gun and a biologist, during a TV show I had called Extinct or Alive, I dove into a bush and picked up Chelonoidea Fantasticus, which was the Fernandina Island tortoise. And the Latin name is Chelonoidea Fantasticus. So I named the whole company after that one individual tortoise, which to this day is the rarest animal in the world. There's only one known individual.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I named the company after her.
That's amazing. So talk to us. This is Entrepreneur. People listening either own businesses or dream of owning a business one day. Talk to us about that transition from, okay, so you follow your passion for biology, you want to make a difference, you start to make an impact through videos and you get hired, but now you want to own your own company and do your own thing. Talk about that transition. It sounds like there's a lot of work involved, but tell us how that all came to be.
I think it came to be out of necessity. You know, there was a point at which I had so many ideas and I was creating shows so fast and I had so many big picture thoughts on how do we, again, it sounds so ridiculous, but like change the world. How do we make a billion people learn about animals and wildlife and care? And you go and say that to a guy that has a production company that makes Blind Date. And he goes, I don't give a shit about that. You know what I mean? He goes, I just want to watch two people fight in the backseat of a taxi and put some pop-ups on screen. And I think, and I'm making that up, but you know, I think, you know,
pretty close to reality. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think your average reality TV producer, and I met with a lot of them, a lot of company owners and everything, goes, I don't see the vision and I don't get it. And I also don't really know the point. And that was, to me, that's like gut-wrenching, you know, to be like, I don't see the point. So there was a point at which I just said to myself, right, the only way that I can do this is if I do it myself. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what a production company was. I didn't understand any of the day-to-day, any of it. But I knew that I had the ability to learn and the ability to push things forward. And basically, if I could sell enough TV shows, it could be successful, right? It could fund itself. And so it was a slow progression where I used a company, Hot Snakes Media, which belongs to my business partner, to do production services for my company. And then I slowly started to hire people one after the next until I built a company. And the company side of it is absolutely exhausting and draining and taxing and dealing with employees and, you know, healthcare and benefits. And you know how all these things go. And I'm sure the people listening understand it. But the reason it's all worth it, even though I literally didn't pay myself for nearly 3 years straight. I don't think I made $1 for nearly 3 years. We lived on my wife's part-time teacher salary for a long time. Yeah, it was rough. But I always stayed true to what I wanted to do. And when I didn't have a boss or a person that I had to try and convince this was a good idea to, I could learn my own way, make my own mistakes, succeed and fail my own way. And so it's been challenging. I don't want to even begin to say it hasn't been.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would be in the same position today or have the leverage that I have if I had always just been like, yep, I'll show up and host the show. Yep, I'll sign a deal to do a YouTube channel with you and be your host. Yep, I'll, you know, support your Nikes. You know, like, I don't think I'd be in the same position I'm in today where I'm on every medium. I'm publishing books. I'm doing all these things and I'm doing it all through my own company because these are the ideas that I have.
So, one thing that often happens when we have the total freedom to say yes or no to whatever we want to do, sometimes there's no check for your dreams and there's no one to like tell you that's a bad idea or that's a good idea or whatever it might be. Do you have sounding boards or do you just go for it?
I mean, a bit of both. So I'm very lucky. I have a business partner in my company in Fantasticus, Eric Evangelista, and he's been in TV for 30 something years. So he understands the market, the buyers, the temperature, who to talk to, blah, blah, blah. So he is my biggest mentor and guiding force. And he knows what works and what doesn't. What he knows is what works and what doesn't in TV and media in general. What he doesn't know is why that little archer fish right there that I'm pointing at behind me is cool. And I know that I can make a whole 5-minute video on that archer fish and people will watch it because of how cool it is. So when you combine those two things,
right,
I've been able to, and look, we've taken huge financial hits and personnel hits, and I've ruined friendships and relationships over trying to figure out how to do things and people not being paid on time because I didn't know what my payroll guy was doing and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I've had all of the pitfalls you could possibly have. I hope at this point. And still it's worth it, even with someone who's incredibly knowledgeable and acts as a guide for me through all of this.
Talk to me about, I mean, you go to some incredibly remote places. Like, it's one thing to get a person there, but how do you get like a whole film crew? Can you talk about like some destination that was just utterly impossible to get to? Because I think the last time we talked, you talked about you hop on a trailer here and then you get on a canoe and then this guy has a boat and, you know, you kind of like jerry-rig your way to this destination.
I keep thinking that's going to end and it keeps not ending. So, okay. You know, look, I mean, we're all over the planet. We were in super remote Zimbabwe this year. Like I said, I just got back from the center of the Sea of Cortez in Baja, Mexico, which was 20 plus hours of driving plus boating to get there. Oof. No planes to take you. So I literally drove from my home here in Santa Barbara. The logistics are a huge part of it. And there are people now at my company who just handle the logistics of, okay, how do we get Forrest and the crew from point A to point B as efficiently as possible? And what you learn is it really doesn't matter what you write on paper when you're dealing with, you know, weather and airplanes that may or may not show up and boats that may or may not be working or broken down. And it all sounds great every time you look at the piece of paper that says, this is your itinerary.
Right.
And then you get there and it's, you're literally hour two and you're already 12 hours behind somehow. And you're like, yep, isn't right. But you know, I don't mind it because that's part of the fun. And in a lot of our shows, we show that too.
Yeah.
I'll turn the camera on the camera guy and I'll be like, hey, what do you think of the fact that you've been sitting in this canoe for 6 hours and we haven't left yet? You know, and like,
yeah,
we just do that. And it's just, I think, interestingly, Dan, the show I was just doing on Humboldt Squid in the Sea of Cortez had this like safety advisor dive master with us, as mandated by the network, not something I typically take with. Super nice guy. And he said to me, this is a guy who's worked on Tom Cruise's productions, like big Mission Impossible films, River Monsters and Bear Grylls and all this stuff. And he said to me at the end of our last 10 days together, which was just about, 48 hours ago, he said to me, you know what, Forrest, you know what makes this more fun than any other project I've ever been on? I said, what's that, Steven? And he said, this is just a bunch of guys having fun and filming it and somehow making that work as a TV show. And I was like, that's what it is. It's a bunch of bros cruising around with a shared passion that have diverse skill sets. And when you're a traveling fraternity like that, you can kind of just get away with it, you know, like you have each other to lean on.
That's awesome. Well, that's a huge compliment, I think, to your leadership style as well. As your business has expanded so much, you've got a lot more people that you're kind of responsible for. How do you kind of deal with all these facets?
Well, what's interesting is as every business is different, of course. But as my business has grown to having more and more employees and personnel, that's really a lot of the behind the scenes people in the office, logistics, financial, legal, so on and so forth. The crew team that I have now are guys that I've pulled with me for the last 10 years from one production entity to another, to side projects, to, you know, can we film a video on these shoes for Instagram to make enough money to get to this next shoot for this month. And now they're all full-time employees at my company, but they're guys that I've, for lack of a better term, grown up with. You know, I started this enterprise, this path when I was 27 years old, and They also are all 26, were to all 27 and 28 years old at the time too. And I'm still have the same group of guys with me. So we've added a couple members here or there along the journey. But for the most part, it's the same core group, and it's all of the, so that's why it's tolerable when you're dealing with all these delays and everything's crazy and, you know, you have to bribe people and you lose money and blah, blah, blah. But then the infrastructure in order for that little core team to travel and do all these things and make it efficient, that's what's really grown and changed. And I do manage that, but it's not like, you know, I don't know their kids. And I wasn't the best man at two of their weddings like I was at two of my camera guys' weddings. You know what I mean? Right, like, it's a whole different, I don't even know their wives' names. You know what I mean? Like, it's a whole different world. So, I've built a in-house company to support that field team. That's great, but they're not my best friends like my field team is.
Yeah, got it. So you do a lot of travel. And as we record this, there's something in the news that is two words, explosive diarrhea.
Oh,
you can't look up any website without seeing news about explosive diarrhea.
I didn't know that.
Well, welcome back to America.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, in your travels, any meals in far-flung places that have left you feeling not so hot?
You mean this week? Or because, I mean, I had said ailment 72 hours ago, so it's not, to me, this is not news. I'll give you a good story. This isn't the one that just happened, but we were filming in the Zambezi Valley about 2 months ago, right? And we'd been there for 3 or 4 days, and we were all settled in, and we were getting ready to do this big crocodile thing. And I was like, all right, I want to do the open of the show where I'm on this little like three-wheeler motorcycle thing with a trailer behind it. And I'm cruising down this dirt road with the savanna and the baobabs of Africa behind me. And everybody's like, yeah. I'd been in this filthy, filthy water filled with crocodile poop the day before, and some had splashed in my mouth. And this isn't a meal, but I'm telling you the story anyway. And so I know I've ingested just absolute croc sewage. And I wake up, my stomach's rumbling, right? And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I'm like, I'm not feeling good. I'm feeling a little green by the gills. But, you know, sometimes this happens from jet lag and heat and bad food and everything else. And so anyway, we set up this whole thing, and we're going to do this amazing show open where the pickup truck drives in front of me, and they hold a camera at eye level, and I'm going to ride this motorcycle thing and set up to the camera on the back of the pickup truck in front of me. I'm Forrest Galante, and I've come to the Zambezi Valley to study blah, blah, blah. And so we're all set. Everybody's in place. And my cameraman, JQ, again, one of my best friends, he goes, all right, Forrest, let's go. So they start rolling with the pickup truck, and I start driving, and now my stomach's going, and I'm driving, I'm sitting on this three-wheeler, I'm going over these bumps, and I go, I'm Forrest Galante, and I am going to shit my pants and jump off of the motorcycle and run into the bushes and pull my pants down, and they've got it all on camera, and it's utter blackmail that I don't know what they're going to do with at some point in time. But it literally, I didn't even make it six words, and I had to run off of the motorcycle. The motorcycle crashed, and I flew into the bushes, had my pants around my ankles.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, when you do what I do, this happens a lot, man.
That is incredible. Wow. Did not see that coming, but neither did you, I guess. But all right. So no. Croc poop, not a good appetizer.
You know, look, Dan, I don't want to overtalk you, but we've eaten rat, we've eaten hippo, we've eaten like 5-day-old squid. I mean, we've eaten some gross stuff in different parts of the world, and most of it does not really affect me. You know, I don't know if I have an iron stomach or I'm just smart about the cleanliness of it. It's those other things that end up getting you sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. So in all your adventures, you've been on land and sea, surf or turf. Like, what's your jam?
For the adventures?
Yeah. Just like, what do you prefer to be in?
Oh, man, that's such a hard question. Like, I just got back from, like I said, 10 days of diving straight in the center of the Sea of Cortez, like to the point that the water is still dripping out of my ears kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would love nothing more than to do a jungle adventure next. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I don't, or a desert one. Like, I don't need to be in the ocean for the next week. So it just changes based on what I've done a lot of, because when we go pretty hard. So like, if you're diving 10, 12 hours a day, by the 15th day, you're pretty ready for a land day, you know? And likewise, if you're, you know, cruising through the desert and you're like, oh my God, I would do anything to get in the ocean right now. But I guess to answer your question in short, I think my heart is really in the ocean stuff more than anything, but you definitely get waterlogged after doing it a lot.
So what, this coming Shark Week, anything that people should be definitely dialing up their DVRs to make sure they don't miss something from you?
Look, I mean, we did, it's America's 250th anniversary, right? Like, we all know that. It's an incredible year. I think America is the greatest country in the world. I really do. I'm very patriotic, especially as someone who came here as a kid. I didn't grow up here. And I really think this is the greatest country in the world. It's afforded me every opportunity that we've just spoken about, you know, to have pooping myself in the bushes and build a company and everything else. And it for this year's Shark Week, we've done a special called Alien Sharks Untamed America, and it really shows off how America has the most incredible diversity of elasmobranchs, of sharks and stingrays in their marine environments, of maybe anywhere in the world. You know, from right here in my home waters of Santa Barbara to Texas to Louisiana to the Northeast to Florida. I mean, we see some incredible, incredible sharks and gigantic sawfish getting tags in them. You know, glow-in-the-dark swell sharks on the reefs, thousands of swarming black tips. I mean, it's an amazing-looking show. And the point of it, the takeaway, is that you don't have to travel to Kenya to see amazing wildlife. You know what I mean? We have incredible wildlife right here in our own backyard. One of the best encounters of that whole show is I'm diving with a basking shark, which is the second-largest fish in the world after the whale shark, 2 miles off of Plymouth Rock. Right there in the Boston Harbor.
Wow.
You know, like literally I can see Plymouth Rock, the birthplace of America, while I'm diving with a basking shark. So it's,
that's,
you know,
incredible.
This show really should show people just how amazing our marine life is here.
Oh, man, I can't wait. I can't wait. Well, Fares, I know you're a busy man, so I think it's time. And you're a fearless man, so I'm using you as a test subject.
Okay.
For the first ever How Success Happens speed test.
Okay, I'm ready.
So you're a wildlife expert. Let's see how expert-y you really are.
Let's go.
All right. Question one. Now, I got this all from the internet, so these answers could be wrong.
I hope I get some right.
Which has been on the earth longer, sharks or trees?
Sharks, baby. Not even close.
Correct. The fossil record, 450 million years ago for sharks, 385 for trees. So well done. How many teeth does a shark go through in its lifetime?
Oh,
300,
wow.
3,000, or 30,000?
3,000 teeth in its lifetime.
Now, the internet says 30,000.
I don't think that's correct. I would look... There's a number that floats around in the community between 2 and 10,000. 30,000 would be a lot of teeth for an individual shark.
Okay.
Yeah. So I recommend checking that one.
Damn, internet making me look dumb. Okay, which shark sometimes eats things like license plates and random junk because it's a bite first and ask questions later type of shark?
The infamous ocean trash can, the tiger shark.
That is correct. Wow, you really do know a lot about sharks and animals, huh? Okay, switching to the land. We got two more questions.
Uh-huh.
Which land mammal is known for producing cube-shaped poop that it stacks to mark its territory?
Only the cutest of them all, the wombat.
That's correct. Have you ever found a stack of cube-like droppings on your travels?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, many, many. And I always show them off because it's the only animal. And do you know why they do that, Dan? This is really interesting. Because they live in a very hilly terrain. So if they had round poops to try and mark their territory, they would roll away.
How? I mean, can you get into the physical aspects of how that happens?
Not really. I imagine it's just a square sphincter, but I couldn't tell you.
That was a great name for a punk band, if anyone
there it
not.
Is.
Okay, so finally, in Jaws the Revenge, Ellen Brody is convinced a great white shark is deliberately targeting her family and moves from Amity Island to the Bahamas. Alas, the shark follows them, leading to a final showdown. My question to you, could that really happen?
It could not. A shark would never follow and lock in on somebody. And to add trivia to your really fun game, the sharks from Jaws were not great white sharks. the whole movie, the whole series is based on a slew of attacks in the Jersey Shore by bull sharks that would actually come up into the rivers, but they weren't scary enough for Spielberg, so he turned it into great white sharks.
Wow. I've seen that movie. I've read a lot about it. I did not know that. So yep. Forrest Galante always bringing the knowledge. Well, so I know Shark Week's coming up, but how else can people keep up with your crazy adventures?
My biggest thing right now is YouTube. You know, we're doing so much stuff on YouTube. I put out a new video every week, all kinds of amazing content. We've got extinct animal rediscoveries, tours of wildlife facilities, crazy cool adventures, info, like sitting at my desk, infotainment kind of videos to help people learn about animals. And it's doing really, really well. And I think that that's a great place. You know, YouTube is the future of media. I think that's the place for people to check it out.
And if you're watching YouTube, it's as of now, it's not scratch and sniff. So you could have come from anywhere and it'll be a pleasant experience.
You can't even tell how much squid slime is on my shorts right now.